This episode of Fuel for the Soul is powered by ASICS. Head over to ASICS.com and sign up for a one ASICS account. It's completely free, and when you sign up, you will receive 10% off your first purchase. You'll also gain access to exclusive colorways on ASICS.com, free standard shipping, special birthday month discounts, and more.
Hi, this is Thomas with Believe in the Run.
This is Megan with Believe in the Run.
And this is Megan with Featherstone Nutrition.
A.K.A. Feathers, the Feathernator, the Feather Fantastic. I don't know. There's a bunch of... I'm trying here. Come on, help me out.
Okay,
man.
You're listening to Fuel for the Soul.
Feathers from Fuel for the Soul. There you go.
The podcast where we chat all things hydration and nutrition and how it affects performance. And today's episode is again sponsored by Runway, minus the vowels.
Yeah. Well, it does have a vowel sometimes. Why?
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah. Why is sometimes a vowel?
Just no U and no A.
Yeah.
Runway.
I love it.
Yeah, in case you're wondering. Why do we use it?
Yeah, tell us about it.
In case you're wondering, what is Runway? It is a new collagen supplement on the market, marketed specifically to runners. So we've done a couple episodes all on collagen, so we won't bore you too much, but newsflash is there's really good research to show that supplementing with collagen like 30 to 45 minutes before our run can help decrease injury risk of ligaments and tendons. We know that if we have a current tendon injury, a tendonitis, or we have some joint issues where we have a little bit of a lack of cartilage from using our joints too much, collagen has been shown to help regrow cartilage and help strengthen and speed healing of different tendon and ligament injuries, and then also decrease a recurrent injury if we've had one. So anybody out there who's had Achilles tendonitis, high hamstring tendonitis knows they suck, right? There's no like timeline of like when we're going to get better, and we're all just looking for something to help it and something to cause it, you know, keep it from coming back. So collagen is one of our best bets from a supplement standpoint for that.
But
so,
this isn't just a collagen supplement, right?
It's got some other micronutrients in it. Let's see. I feel like I need some readers to read this.
I know it's got magnesium. I know it's got zinc. I know it's got a little bit of vitamin C. I know
yes,
it's got some stuff
C.
for hydration, so some sodium, right?
Yep. It's got vitamin D in it too, which I love. It does have some B12, so if your tinkle is bright yellow, that is why. No big deal. Yeah, and then like Thomas said, there's, you know, potassium and sodium and things that would be like in a normal electrolyte drink too. So you're right. It is beyond just collagen.
I have a quick question for you as long as we're on it. Hey, if you know, you said to take it before I work out, 20 to 30 minutes before I work out. But say that I was busy and I was in a little bit of a rush and I didn't take it down right away. Am I still benefiting if I take it later in the day, especially with the hydration part of it?
I think so. I 100% think so. I really want them to do a research study comparing the benefits of pre-exercise versus like any time in a runner's day. We don't have that yet, but I have to imagine it still is beneficial, just maybe not quite as effective as taking it before. So yeah. I do the same thing. If I forget, I'm like, oh, I'm going to have this with lunch.
It's an easy way to add in some extra hydration in your day. Mm-hmm. And it tastes lemon limey.
It does.
And if you listened to our last episode where we plugged this, we gave you the wrong URL. So just FYI, you want to go to rnwy.life, not .com, .life. And
fancy.
There you can see all the products that they offer. And then Megan, I think you have a discount code.
Mm-hmm. Feathers 15. Get you 15% off.
This episode is all about Olympic trials nutrition. So if you listen to our drop podcast, we did a recap of the running kind of. We just went on tangents about that. But this is all about the nutrition that the athletes took in. And then I know a bunch of people had questions for you, specifically, Megan, about what the athletes were doing. So we're going to dive into all that.
And, you know, caveat, part of it might be speculation, right? I'm literally eavesdropping on people's other conversations on podcasts and being like, oh, I think this is what they did. Or people said we saw things. So this is going to get juicy, guys.
Okay. So Megan, before we dive into the specifics of this year's trials, I know there was a couple studies done from 2020 marathon trials. So talk to us about those.
So I think they've done some really good research where they're really trying to get to the bottom of female runners and how do we stay healthy. So we've started to do some research on female runners where we're looking at like, how healthy are we, right? We know that eating disorders have run rampant through this sport and other aesthetic sports over the years. So really putting some light and some value and some understanding on what's happening out there. So after the Olympic trials in 2020, there was a study they did where they reached out to as many participants as they possibly could to survey them and ask them about their eating habits and their history of disordered eating. So it was all self-reported. And this study was actually published 2 years ago, but it was coming back to light before these trials. And the way that it was being passed around Instagram was as like an eye-opener of as you're looking out there at the runners, and maybe it's making you feel a certain way about how you look as a runner, let's remember that a significant portion of these runners are currently struggling or have struggled with some sort of disordered eating, eating disorder, and that mentally, you know, this may be a very dark place for some of these runners that we look up to, right? So it was a very interesting spin. So I thought it would be good to bring up because I know probably half of our listeners were down there. I feel like everybody was down at the trials. So I think
heard a lot of feathers.
Good. Yeah, there was. I know poor Sloan was like, why are they calling you feathers, Mom? I had to explain to her where that came from. Right. So then people were calling her mini feathers and she was like, I don't want to be a feather, Mom. And I'm like, it's okay, you don't have to. So back to the study. So they reached out to 396 of the female participants and 146 wrote back, right? So like, again, it was, you know, a sample that, you know, was just kind of whoever answered. And their average age was 30 and their average BMI was 19.4, which is lowish, right? Which we would expect. They're, you know, more elite runners.
Yeah.
But the interesting part was 32% of them reported having a past eating disorder. And then 6% said of those 32%, 6% were still struggling with that eating disorder. And then 67% reported that they restricted nutrition intake in the 3 months leading up to the trial. So, you know, 2/3 of these women. Yeah.
Do you believe that everybody who has an eating disorder is aware they have an eating disorder? Because I think that it would be possible to be like, under fueling while you run, trying to obtain an aesthetic without thinking that you are having issues with an eating disorder.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, the criteria behind actually classifying an eating disorder, it's evolved, but it's a little bit muddy. So that's why I always say an eating disorder or disordered eating, because I think, you know, sometimes actually labeling something as a clinical eating disorder is hard to do, right? So to your point, Thomas, I think, you know, that would be classified as disordered eating, you know, whether it went on to be classified as something else, who knows? But yeah, you're right. I mean, that's not normal, you know, healthy, supportive thinking about nutrition for a runner. And then 44% of the respondents reported weight dissatisfaction. So as we are watching these trials, we are looking at these women, you know, I know the thought train that goes through some people's minds of like, I need to look like that. I don't look like that. That's why I'm not as fast as them, you know, or some variation of those thoughts. And then these athletes, half of them are thinking, I don't like what I look like, right? So I think it's just a really good conversation to put out there on the table. To just understand that as humans, as runners, like a lot of people aren't satisfied with how they look. And I think, you know, maybe understanding that that's a thing, right? Makes us all feel like, okay, let's do something about that then, right? Like, it's not normal that we feel like that. So, you know, everybody, it's common for people to think that. I think it's easy to idolize someone and look at them and be like, oh, they don't have a problem. They have everything they need, right? Whereas we all have stuff going through our heads. So I think, you know, it's good to get some of this information on the, out there.
I actually had to go and do a 6-month skin test because I had that little spot of skin cancer that had to be removed.
Yeah.
And they strip you down and they look at your body and they have a light and they go over your whole body. I don't know. You've got to be feeling so good about yourself to not be self-conscious when they're doing that. Cause like, I was like, oh my God, I'm probably the ugliest person she's seen today.
You
know, just, and she's doing that. So like, I get that, but I know Megan, you don't like talking about yourself too often. like feelings and that kind of thing. But
you like to discuss your feelings.
Yeah, you're closed. No, but this... I have a question for you. So you were spectating and you were watching, and you're one of the people that has a shot to be running some of the paces that would get you into the Olympic trials. Both of you do. And I'm wondering, when you were watching, what was going through your head when you were looking at the women that were running? Did you feel secure? And like, did you think, oh, I should be out there? Like, what was going through your head?
No, not at all did I feel like I should be out there. I was like, thank goodness I'm not out there. But what's interesting is, I will say, it's hard for me to look at our top three women, the top 10 women, the top 20, any of the women out there for the most part, and not feel like, wow, that is a petite human. That is someone who I will never look like. That is something that I don't think I can ever do, that doesn't feel attainable. But at the same time, I think probably just from our conversations, Megan, and from like being so involved in the nutrition side of things, whereas maybe if I wasn't this in tuned with things, I would spiral into, if I really want this, I need to do restrictive eating, I need to cut back on things, I need to lose weight. But I know I want to be in this sport for as long as possible, and I know for my mental health, I need to be able to run. Yeah. And so those thoughts kind of came and went. Like,
good.
It was definitely there. It was definitely a thought that crossed my mind of like, wow, this is a much smaller person than me, but I don't think that I'm willing to give up the longevity in the sport for one day of maybe a great race.
Mm-hmm. Watching the guys, I also saw that and was like, dude, I got to get that lean muscle. I got to get that. These guys look baggy and smalls. You know, that's if you want to be fast, you got to get ripped. And maybe it's a different thing. Like, for me, it was a more of a like, man, they're just ripped. Like, these dudes have no body fat. And I didn't see one. I wouldn't consider myself by any means like having a weight issue, but like compared to those guys, I feel like a chunky monkey.
I still remember when Emily Sisson gave us our medals after the New York City Marathon. Like, she's just such a tiny human. Like, her quad is a very strong quad, but I was like, it's the size of my arm. Like, everybody's just built differently. And that's probably why some of these very small petite runners are as fast as they are, because their bodies are tiny and naturally tiny. But that's where, you know, when you look out on the course, and maybe it's because I do what I do for a living, but like, to me, it's very easy to spot somebody that's just naturally small and then somebody who might not be healthy at that small size, you know? So we would expect somebody who's just petite to have like a filled out body and good muscle mass and good muscle tone. Like, muscle tone is probably a big piece of being well nourished. We're going to lose muscle mass and we're not going to have a whole lot of muscle definition when we are under fueling. So, you know, when I look out,
is that
there
like the skinny fat that people talk about?
I mean, probably not a fair comparison, but you know, I think it's some of these males and females are running an ungodly amount of miles. I mean, what do we hear? Like 140 miles for Dakota, you know? It's a lot, right? So it's got to be a lot to keep up with nutrition, you know, to eat enough to do that. So there was another study that came out that was looking at low energy availability, which is what we talk about all the time. Like, that's the beginning of like red S diagnosis, the relative energy deficiency in sport. So what that's looking at is like, we need a certain amount of energy for our running. So we take that out of the equation, right? We look at how much we're eating for a day and we're like, all right, let's bucket this amount towards running. How much is left? And if there's not enough energy left in our day to support our daily functions, that's what's considered low energy availability. Like there's just not enough left to keep us healthy after we account for the miles that we're running. And what this study looked at was the short-term, medium-term, and long-term effects. We typically just look at like what the long-term effects of underfueling are. But this was looking at the short-term. So like if you're underfueling for a few days to a couple weeks, you have a decreased power output, you have decreased aerobic metabolism, decreased well-being, and then also just a decrease in muscle performance and strength. So like
Dude, that sounds just like me right now.
Eat some more, Thomas.
I got to.
Are you eating enough?
I don't think so, according to your thing.
Yeah. And then, you know, medium term, right, we start to see like running speed isn't improving or maybe it's even decreasing some, increased injury risks, bigger mood disturbances, reductions in strength, like we can't lift as much, things like that. And then just an overall increase in fatigue. And then when we look at long term, those are the things that we typically see when we're talking about like red S, right? So we see like crazy decreases in performance and recovery and fatigue, disrupted sleep. We see like ferritin in the gutter, and even though we're still supplementing, total decrease response to training, all sorts of injuries. So like kind of the classic, right? But it's interesting to look at that. So when we kind of reflect back on that first study, you know, people that were intentionally restricting, you know, the 2/3 of the women that were restricting nutrition while they were training at a high level for the Olympics in 2020, Olympic trials in 2020, like they were seeing some of these negative consequences to their performance, I'm sure, if they were restricting energy, you know? So I think it's a good conversation to have. It's good to understand that if we aren't fueling our bodies for what we're expecting them to do, we're going to have short-term consequences. We're going to have long-term consequences. Sometimes we can see a bang out performance, right? When somebody's underfueling and then it cascades. Yeah.
That's the thing. It's like the consequences don't seem that bad when you see some of these, like you do hear about people getting injured a lot and you're like, okay, maybe, maybe that's a consequence of high mileage, underfueling, whatever, whether it's intentional or unintentional. But then you see people perform at a very high level. And if you're just looking at the physical appearance to gather whether or not they're fueling correctly, you could be like, well, these people who are there, they're kicking butt. So how do you do both?
So I think sometimes we get away with underfueling for a certain amount of time. Like I was saying, like we have a bang out performance when we're our lightest and then we break something, right? I mean, we've seen this time and time again in the running, you know, industry. I mean, I think Ryan Hall speaks very openly about how he was so successful, but he was totally underfueling his body and then he crashed, you know? So some people come out of the woodwork later and kind of discuss like some of the impacts that it might have had for them. And then of course we have this bang out performance when we're at a certain body weight and then we're always trying to achieve that again because that was our best performance, right? And then it's just the slippery slope and it gets kind of nasty. So all this to say, right? Most of us, I can't imagine people listening are professional runners to fuel for the soul, but you know, for the rest of us, like, let's just be smart. Let's be really smart about fueling our bodies to make sure that exactly like what Meg said, we can stay in this for the long haul.
It's a difficult spot for recreational runners to look at the top performers and be like, that is the ideal. Here's what I look like. I'm not going to try to win the Olympics, but I'd like to get that aesthetic. I can underfuel. I don't have to listen to feathers because I'm not trying to, win the Olympics or, you know, trials qualification. So I think that's where where it relates to the everyday runner. I mean, does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I think it totally makes sense. But I mean, my rebuttal to that would be like, what about the mood disturbances? What about the fatigue? Like, are we willing to like risk feeling happy and good in our day or being unable to function after a long run because we're underfueled? Like, we got lives to live. This isn't what we're doing for a living. This is what we're doing for fun. So let's make sure that it's fun, both in and out of running. And then, you know, that it's overall good for our well-being and health as a whole.
Yeah, I totally agree. Okay, should we dive into some of the stuff that happened in trials, or is there anything else you want to say on that topic?
No, let's get to the fun stuff.
Okay.
Like people who are UCAN sponsored eating Morton.
So we've talked a lot about UCAN on here, and we've had our questions about athletes using the product. And although we cannot confirm, we saw from photo evidence that Emily Sisson was definitely taking a Morton gel, which was available on course for all of the athletes. So that's understandable. But she also had the feed bottle, like not even a UCAN bottle. So what was in that? Like what do you think was happening?
I know. We've always said, like, some of these athletes that are, you know, UCAN sponsored, like, is that seriously all they're using? Because we know it's a very different type of energy source, and like, it's got its place, but I'm like, seriously, these high end punchy, you know, fast as whatever runners are not using like a fast punchy carbohydrate, especially at the end of a race, you know? So when we discovered, it was actually one of you guys sent me the Believe in the Run photos, and one of the listeners sent me your photo and was like, that's a Morton in her hand, in Emily Sisson's hand. And we're zooming and I'm like, Meg. And I'm like, it is. It totally is.
Now they did have Morton on the course for the athletes.
They did.
In her defense, it could have been like, hey, I'm hungry. This is here. I don't have to wait for my bottle.
Well, and I mean, we don't know any of their contracts. Like personally, if I owned a sports nutrition brand, I wouldn't expect my athlete to use exclusively my product. I mean, I don't know how much money they're throwing at people, but like as a sports dietitian, I see the value in using different products and using multiple products and finding what works. So, I mean, who knows? Maybe all of these athletes are allowed to do a mixture of products. We don't know, but it always, you know, gets a little spicy when you see one athlete using somebody else's product.
Yeah.
I did not see anybody downing ketone IQs on course.
So that was actually a question we got from a lot of people. Well, I do have to say, okay, so I asked you guys like what your questions were about the trials. And one was, did I spy Emily Sisson with a Morton gel? True that Emily Sisson was using Morton on the course. I don't blame her. You can barf emoji was the rest of it. And then three, that was good, right? And then four other people also ask about Emily and the UCAN and the Morton. So like lots of people are invested in what she's actually doing. So I don't know. I mean, I feel like we need to figure this out somehow.
Yeah. I mean, she's the, like, we all did the fun, like, prediction who's going to win the trials thing. And it's always like, no one knows, but I feel like across the board, if we were most confident in any athlete, it was Emily Sisson on the day. And it's because she's just such a consistent runner. And so, of course, we want to know, like, what is she actually taking in? Because, I mean, sure, she's had a couple injuries over the years, but for the most part, she's been very healthy and she's breaking American records. And so, yeah, it's very fascinating.
I mean, I think Sarah Hall is another UCAN athlete. I don't know if we saw anything while she was on the course. But
Kira D'Amato, Sarah Hall, Emily Sisson, like, there's a ton of,
amazing. We've got a lot of people on their side. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They sure do. Yeah. So, I mean, that was, you know, always a hot take there.
Okay. So in your notes here, you said Dakota ate a bagel and cream cheese and yogurt pre-race. Interesting.
I loved it. And she even said, I know a lot of people can't do dairy, but I can. And I was just like, no, because she knows like people are like dairy haters. And I think we often hear a lot about elite athletes, like cutting out gluten, cutting out dairy. You know, we do hear a lot of those messages. So I loved that her innocent little voice is like, I had a bagel and cream cheese and yogurt. Like it was, I was like, oh, she's just so pure and normal. And that's what we eat. And I thought it was cool to hear, you know, her say that, and just that's, and she, you know, said that's what works for me. So that's what I ate. Yeah. And you guys,
is that enough for a pre race? Would you say that's enough?
Yeah. You have to remember too, that, carbohydrate recommendations pre-run are based on weight, right? So like a 200-pound male is of course going to eat like three bagels, right? So, you know, from my perspective, I was like, yeah, that sounded sounded like a good, you know, pre-run thing. Yeah. No, it was a later start. So I'm hoping she also ate something else. Yeah, it is. It is. But again, I mean, it goes back to like, this is probably what she did in training when she was, you know, living in Florida, and this is what worked for her. So this is what she did. And I think that's exactly what, you know, we want people to do. And she clearly crushed it. She looked so strong at that finish. Yeah. She did not look like a wilting flower like some of the other finishers did. So, yeah, we should find out interesting, what she was using too.
Do you remember in Chicago when we were watching the race, you and I were spectating while Meg ran? Do you remember seeing Dakota there?
I don't, and I regret that. I do not remember her at Chicago at all. Yeah.
I mean, I have pictures and stuff from just our camera that I took with her. She looked really good. And I would think that she must be doing something right with nutrition that she can, like, back Chicago up.
Run 140 mile weeks and recover and come back to it. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like
it'd be interesting to get you talk to her and get her nutrition.
Yeah. She's somebody that strikes me as like, she's got this, going down. Like I'm not too concerned. I think she's going to handle the training into the Olympics, and I think she's going to do well. Yeah.
Okay. We obviously have to talk about Clayton and Connor because, well, first of all, their finish was nuts. But I do love the quote that I saw from Clayton Young that said, one, eat, two, eat good food.
Yeah. So Clayton is very open about how nutrition has helped with his advancement in his career. You know, he's talked about how he was kind of never the favorite pick here and that type of stuff. And that when he decided that he wanted to qualify for the Olympics, he had like a long conversation with his wife and told her that they needed a chef. They needed somebody to be able to feed him. And he never said she took that personally, but she stepped it up, and she has an Instagram called, I think it's like Feed Your Runner or something. And like, she has made sure that he has everything he needs from a food standpoint. And of course I was like checking out her Instagram and started following her. Just to see what she was up to. And like, he is in really good hands and has really prioritized pre-race, you know, recovery, daily nutrition to keep up with his training. And he's been healthy. And I love that he, you know, put out there like how important that was for his training. Cause I think, again, we need, you know, more of those messages out there.
I would like that for myself.
You have that.
Yeah, you pretty much have that. I don't know what you're talking
about. She packs your lunch, she makes your dinner, she makes you bagels for breakfast.
Connor Mann said Clayton used 320 plus ketones plus electrolytes in his bottles, and it tastes terrible. Interesting.
So you had said you didn't see anyone taking ketones, Thomas. I have heard multiple people put it in their bottles, like made their own concoction. So,
why would you do that? Like on a nutrition standpoint, like why? What's the benefit?
So, I mean, we've talked about ketones before. It's an additional fuel source. So they're like, they've got their carbs in there. They've got their ketones in there. He added electrolytes as well. You know, because obviously it was hot and it was the heat, but Clayton was interesting. So he got these large, like metal water bottles that you unscrewed like the whole top, you know, and in there he had his little squeeze bottle that you saw them carry. They were like clear squeeze bottles with straws that came out is what they were carrying. So that was inside of it. A hat was inside of it. And then he filled it with water and froze the entire thing. And I guess he'd practiced this and had the timing down so that when he opened, like every time he got to the thing, he had this big canister and he opened the canister, switched out his hat. So he had a cold hat and then had a really cold bottle in there instead of it sitting in the blazing sun, which I was like, he's a smart cookie. Like he's got this down. No one else did that. What Everyone else champ. Complained, right, that their fluids were hot. And I was like, that was thinking ahead.
I do like that. That is smart. And I baller. Have you ever, so I've run out of fuel on a run before and like stopped at 7-Eleven during a long run and ended up buying like a cold Gatorade or something like that from their refrigerator. Mm-hmm. And it rejuvenates you like nothing else can. Like a warm bottle of that you've been holding in your hand is not the same as an ice cold, you know, Gatorade, and it just cools your body down so quick.
Yeah, I know. And look at him. He finished like a boss, like celebrating, smile on his face. Like,
he could have won. And he like just looked the best and like hyping the crowd at the end. Like, what a champ.
Feathers, I don't think we've asked you yet. what was your thought on clearly giving Connor Mance the win from Clayton?
So I've listened to like every podcast I can, trying to finish formulating my thought here. But before I did that, and Clayton and Connor's personalities are coming out very clear. They have very different personalities. So that's playing into this whole scenario now as I'm listening to more things. However, watching it in the moment, my thought was he 100% gave it to Connor. Like, it was just like there was a little conversation. There was a chatter in the finish. And
he was waving him.
Connor, right? He was waving him. Connor went ahead and he presented him. Like, it was just, it looked very clear that he gave it away. As I've listened more, I'm like, okay, they said they couldn't hear each other, so they really weren't talking, that it was too loud. I'm like, I don't know. Maybe there's more to it than that. But that was my initial, yeah, perspective on it, for sure.
So interesting. I don't know if we'll ever really know what went down, but
I don't think
we'll
will.
See.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, a couple more things that people did. Scott Faubel ate s'mores Pop-Tarts pre-race. 3-6 total is the rumor.
Yeah, it was either 3 full packs or 3 like actual Pop-Tarts. Okay. That's where we're not sure. But either way, I'm like, pretty good. I mean, he didn't finish quite as
that's
how he'd
good.
Like.
Wait, he didn't.
He DNF'd,
right? DNF'd because of stomach issues, yeah. Though, or he just DNF'd because
that's what everybody's saying, that he DNF'd for stomach issues at mile 10. And I'm like, a Pop-Tart is A, not going to cause stomach issues, especially when he's training with them. And then B, 10 miles in is very early to have stomach issues. So I'm like, I don't know if that's even what it was.
Okay. 410 qualified, 259 finished, 81 ran qualifying times. Wow.
Insane. Like that is insane. So 19.7% of the field actually hit the qualifying time there.
But that makes sense, though. One, they qualify. And two, you're running next to other people that are trying to run
real fast.
Real fast. So have you ever noticed, like in a race, sometimes you can just get caught up. And if it looks easy for someone else, it's a little easier for you.
Yeah. Do you think that's why so many people didn't finish? You think they went out too hot?
Yeah, I would bet that. And I would bet, I mean, the temperatures were definitely a factor. And I would think that the motivation, once you know you're not going to the Olympics, it's like, why am I doing this to myself?
Yeah, for some of the more elite, and I could see that because they can pull out and do something else. Yeah.
That
would be my guess 100% is we're going to see a lot of people in Boston that DNF'd before mile 20 or so. Because unless you're out there doing a victory lap, finishing that race has got to just be demoralizing if you're not in contention and you're
warm.
A professional runner and you're by yourself because there's only a few hundred people out there.
And if you're ever thinking about going to spectate the trials, definitely do it. It is insane. It's not just the stuff that's going on around the race. We saw so many people from so many different, like the New York City Marathon people were there. The Boston Marathon people were there.
Okay, we have to talk. I know we're running out of time here. Maybe we can do like a rapid fire at the end. But Jessica Klein was the fourth female. I see that you found out she's running 72 miles per week max.
Yeah.
She screwed up her fueling in previous marathon blocks, wasn't eating before or after runs, got another stress fracture. This time she started intentionally fueling and felt much stronger. I would say she looked freaking strong AF out there.
So strong. So strong out there. I was like, that girl is on it. So that's why I was like, I want to figure out what she's doing with her nutrition, right? So yeah, she said like in the past, so she was a professional runner. It got to be too much, took a step back. And then I don't know where the timeline of the nutrition changes came in, honestly, but she said like she was busy. So she would just roll out of bed and go run and then go to work and just not eat. And that's when she ended up with one of the stress fractures. And she was like, wait, like if I'm really trying to take this to the next level, I need to get intentional. And I'm like, wow, that sounds like let's all, you know, jump on that bandwagon. We don't talk about that here or anything. So it was cool, you know, to hear her say again, you know, Clayton mentioned what a role nutrition was in his performance. Jess McLean, those are two people that I don't want to say were underdogs, but were people that weren't always on people's list of doing well. And both of them, you know, said nutrition was a huge thing that they had changed in order to have the success they did on the day. So good stuff.
Okay, so we're going to do a quick rapid fire from some of the listener questions about the trial specifically.
Can you put in a sound effect for that?
Here it goes.
Be like, pow, 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 pow.
Yeah, maybe, probably okay. Not. Okay, it appeared to me that the top performers were not heavy sweaters. Is this true?
I mean, that's a huge piece of this. It was very hot down there, so people who don't tolerate the heat well, aka heavy sweaters, didn't do well. I totally agree. I was picking people out as they were doing their loops around because, you know, we saw them four times and I was like, oof, they're sweating too much too early. And that would be me. Like, it's not judgment. It's just genetics. So I'm putting out there right now.
There's people Clayton drenched. Young,
yes, there were. Clayton Young tolerates the heat hands down better than Connor. I know everybody likes Connor more. They think he's a better athlete, but I think Connor's going to blow up in the heat at Paris, and I think Clayton is going to crush it. And I'm just putting that out there now.
I disagree with you that people like Connor more. I'm a Clayton guy.
Yeah.
No, I think he's smart about the heat. He doesn't sweat as much as Connor. He tolerates the heat better. Paris is going to be hot. Like, I think he's going to do better. So to answer the listener questions, yes, I do think that in the heat, people who don't have as crazy of a sweat rate do perform better.
Okay, which fuel did you see in the most athletes' hands?
Morton. So this was the hard thing. Yeah, well, you saw Morton because it was on course, but most of mm-hmm. them put their nutrition in their bottles. So it was kind of like a blank slate. You really weren't sure what people were actually taking.
Seems like the pros only use liquids. How do they get enough carbs?
So that was another question. People were getting very upset that, why aren't any of them taking gels? And I said, because most of them have Morton 320 in their bottle or something like the Scratch High Carb. So they're concentrating, you know, 50 grams of carbohydrates into that one bottle, maybe even more. So then another question is, well, they're only taking a swig. Why aren't they drinking it all? Well, if they've got 80 grams of carbs in that bottle, they probably know, like, I just need to try to get half of it down, right? They have, I would hope, a really solid fueling plan while they're out there. And it's just, since they do have access to a table so frequently, they don't necessarily need to carry. So they can get their fluids and their carbs and their sodium all in one gulp versus us who are kind of juggling multiple products.
Are runners actually keto or just using the drink for sponsors?
I love that. So even if someone's taking ketones, it doesn't mean they're keto. So I get that. Like, that would make sense given our, you know, landscape of nutrition, but people are using the ketones as an additional fuel source to the carbohydrate. So I don't know if people are using them. I mean, clearly Clayton Young had them in his bottle because Connor said he tasted it and it was bitter and gross. And I think someone said they saw Dez take a actual shot of the ketones from a bottle, which would make sense because they just picked her up as a sponsor. So I don't know. I'm not sure how many people out there on that course were actually using ketones.
Okay. Does Kira really only use 3 UCAN gels? Surely there is more, right?
I would think so. I don't know where we're getting that information from. But yeah, I would have to imagine she was taking more out there. Yeah.
Okay. Scott Fobble. Oh, this isn't a question, but Scott Fobble's vomiting in every marathon. Team Boss needs you.
I just thought that was funny.
Panning missed his last bottle. Did it cost him the team? I didn't know he missed his last bottle.
I didn't either. I haven't watched the broadcast yet. So my hot take on that one is he probably missed his last bottle because he was already struggling. He was probably like the effort or the energy it was going to take to go get that bottle, to get that bottle down, to take that nutrition was too much for him in that moment. I don't think he missed it and then deteriorated. I would say he was starting to deteriorate and chose not to waste energy on grabbing that, which I know doesn't make sense, but we make goofy decisions when our performance starts to get goofy, our brain gets a little fuzzy. So my guess would be this did not cost him the team. It was just a product of the fact that he was already starting to slow down.
Yeah.
You know what he needed was ketones.
Thomas is all over it.
Why is Sisson getting side stitches?
So people wanted to speculate that this was like related to her using UCAN and, you know, nutrition. Most of the time, I have not found side stitches to be related to nutrition. They're a muscle, they're breathing, they're humidity, they're allergies and breathing related. Like, most of it's a diaphragm breathing piece. So I don't think I'm qualified to say why she's getting them then.
All right, our last question of the day. Did you see anything unique about how the trials conducted athlete nutrition stations?
The trials crushed it. It was amazing how they set up nutrition because it was such a small race. So every single table had 8 positions on it. So you knew your table number and your position number for your bottle. So there wasn't this ravaging around looking for your goofy decorated bottle like I did at Berlin, right? It was literally like, I know my table is number 3, position 4. And you had a diagram of exactly where number 4 was going to be staggered on that table. So, I mean, they crushed the whole nutrition piece. And then they did have flat tables that had Mortons lined up, like, perfectly 2 inches apart.
Pretty.
So that you could, like, they were beautiful perfect. Tables. Yeah. They were perfect. I'm like, I don't know who was in charge of that, but, like, you guys nailed that too. So
we ran the course in the morning and they had already had the Mortons lined up, and, like, one of the volunteers just walked up and, like, moved one just slightly, and they were all joking about how perfect everything was. And I was like, I love that, one, there's all these amazing volunteers out here who were cheering for us, by the way, when we just did the loop in the morning. And that they, like, were taking such good care of the athletes. Like, it was lovely.
What I thought was interesting on the nutrition side was the porta potties.
Yeah, they didn't have those, unfortunately.
I did hear about that, and I was like, that sounds nightmarish. Like, that's embarrassing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't understand that. Like, that's every race. Like, porta potties. Like, when we were running the course, I just thought,
they hadn't.
They'll probably bring them out later. And then we talked to some of the athletes. They were like, no, I almost went in the bushes. I almost got DQ'd.
Yeah. I heard that, and I was like, especially in the heat, like, if it, you know, that's when people who don't normally have GI issues might, is when it's hot and they're extending themselves further than they expect to, you know. So I was like, oh yeah, that hurt my soul a little bit.
Yeah, but everything else was perfect and lovely.
Awesome. It was so fun.
Okay, that wraps up our trials conversation. Yeah. If you have a question that we have not answered, you can send us an email at fuelforthesoulpodcast@gmail.com, and we will answer it here on the show.
Is it time?
It's time.
Peas and carrots. And I said I was going to add something.
You Franks were going to add Morton, and then you're going to say Franks and beans.
Oh, Franks and beans.
Franks and beans, yeah. That's right.
Peas and carrots, Franks and beans.
Bye.
All right. Bye. I like what you did there.
You like that? I've been watching Love on the Spectrum, and I love it.
He's like, is this me? Am I here? We all need a less of a filter. I appreciate this a lot.
Look like there's a lot of skeletons running around out there. Because I'm not saying, hey, look at all the skinnies. We're saying,
look at all the skinnies. You are.
Is that going to be in an outtake?
It better be.
All right, I need to compose myself. All right,
I'm back. I'm going to pee my pants. Oh, my.
Stop. You got to stop. Okay, otherwise, I'm not going to get through.
Maybe
this.
That'll be my closeout today.
Thomas. You're going to be kicked off the show.
Okay.
Once again, I'm crying.
Frank and beans.